This is travel and landscape photographer Peter Flindell, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 93. Nikon drops an incredibly fast portrait lens. In this episode, Nikon announces the fastest 105. The world's widest 12mm rectilinear is announced, data on the most used cameras, lenses, and settings, and Lightroom comes to Apple TV. All that and more in episode 93 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Peter. I greatly appreciate it, brother. When I first met Peter, he was off on another great adventure somewhere on this planet, doing what he loves doing, and that's capturing its beauty. Based in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, he travels throughout Asia extensively on a monthly basis and makes his way to Europe and North America at least 3 or 4 times a year. Peter does not stay still in one place for too long, as you can see, because there's a whole world out there to explore and photograph for his fine art and travel photography. If you'd like to see some of the many places he's captured, there's no better place than at his website, which is untamedlens.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 93 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button, making sure you get every episode, and also telling your friends on social media and elsewhere, and helping get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. We're a little over halfway through with 2016, which still blows my mind because I feel like we just started it. But we've seen some really great lenses, and one of those is surely going to be the new 105mm f1.4 ED from Nikon. This new lens is the fastest autofocus 105 on the planet. Yeah, check Nikon out, huh? A full-frame lens clearly destined for the bags of portrait photographers. Also, those who want that really nice, creamy bokeh afforded by an f1.4 aperture. There's just nothing quite like it. Well, there's better if you're on the Canon side and shoot f1.2, of course. So there's that. Now, if I remember correctly, Nikon has an old f2 and f2.8 version of this 105, but a brand new f1.4 with all the latest in lens advancements is surely going to make for an incredible lens, especially if you're a portrait photographer, and especially if you have this kind of money, this will be the lens that you get. It has 14 elements in 9 groups, 3 of those elements being superb ED glass, an electronically controlled 9-blade aperture, and nano crystal coat to help reduce ghosting and flare. Of this new lens, Nikon says, quote, "Meet the new standard by which all short telephoto lenses will be measured against. The world's first full-frame autofocus 105mm with an f1.4 aperture. A marvel of optical precision, distortion correction, and craftsmanship." End quote. This undoubtedly great lens from Nikon will be available sometime in late August of 2016 for just under $2,200 US. And my guess is that while that's a lot of money, it'll be well worth it. If you're shooting a lot of portraits, this is going to be on your camera a lot of the time, I'm thinking. Especially if you drop $2,200 on it, right? Next. Rather than speeding Lightroom up for me, okay, and all of you guys too, Adobe feels like what we really wanted and needed was Lightroom for Apple TV. All right, I'm hard on Adobe, and I know that a lot of you guys out there get that it's tongue-in-cheek here, but seriously, Adobe, can we get a more usable Lightroom? Come on, like sometime maybe in 2016, that would be nice. I can wait on Lightroom for Apple TV. It's okay, I promise. Now, unlike all other versions of Lightroom, this one isn't for editing. This is purely for admiring your work. All right, and maybe showing them to clients as well. Listen, we all have photos that we especially like, and sometimes viewing them on our computer or phone just doesn't cut it. So maybe you want to kick it a bit old style and show your extended family photos of your vacation like Grandpa used to do with that slide carousel that he had. You know, once that thing came out, that was a solid 2 hours that you were never going to get back. All right, millennials, you're just going to have to Google it. And also, be thankful that you don't have to suffer through hundreds of photos like we did. Grandpa liked every photo that he shot. And you know what? He showed them all. Call Grandpa. Call. That's the key word here. Call. But what might have helped Grandpa a lot, bless his soul, would be Lightroom for Apple TV. Grandpa aside, if you're meeting with clients and showing them photos, this might be the solution you've been waiting for. Now, the photos that are going to appear in this are the ones that you've synced with Lightroom Mobile or Lightroom on the web. So this is just another way to view your photos. And hey, on a big screen, that's not a bad thing, right? You can use the standard slideshow mode to automatically move through your images or film strip mode and select specific images to view. A very nice feature that many are going to appreciate is the ability to zoom in on the images too, so you can have a closer look. According to Adobe, quote, "Our goal is to make Lightroom the system that you use to share your photos with anyone, anywhere, with the best possible quality. And Lightroom for Apple TV is designed to make that goal a reality on the big screen." End quote. I guess it depends on how big of a big screen that you actually got at Costco or Walmart, right? Yeah. Now, if you have at least a fourth generation Apple TV and an Adobe Creative Cloud subscription, of course, you're good to go. Just look for the Lightroom app in the App Store on your Apple TV and have at it. Okay, Adobe, now that we got that done, back to rewriting Lightroom for me. Us. Next. You know, of late, some crazy things have been happening with lenses. We're seeing lenses that didn't previously exist thanks to computer-aided design and manufacturing. And one of those lenses is the Leica 12mm f2.8 from Chinese lens maker Venus Optics. A lens, they say, is the widest rectilinear f2.8 lens out there. If you're not familiar with the term, rectilinear basically means that it keeps straight lines straight. That's pretty much all you need to know. Something that you would, of course, mostly want in wide-angle images. That is, unless you desire that distorted view of our world. Then, not so much. Venus is touting this lens as being a 0D or zero distortion lens. You know, zero is very specific. So once people are actually using this, let's see if there's any distortion or not. Now, as you may recall, a little over a year ago, Canon released its 11-24mm f4L lens, but this new 12mm lens from Venus Optics is a full stop brighter and faster at f2.8. Unlike that Canon lens, though, that's right. I hear many of you guys out there thinking it right now. This is an all-manual lens, but that's okay, because many people out there are shooting wide-angle lenses manually anyhow, especially if you're shooting landscape or real estate photography. And that makes a lot of sense, because you're often shooting way stopped down so you can get everything in focus. At that point, autofocus is a luxury. Now, this new lens features multiple extra low dispersion and aspherical elements, 16 elements in 10 groups, in fact, a 121.96 degree angle of view, a 7-blade aperture, a minimum focusing distance of roughly 9 inches, and weighs in at just 1.34 pounds. Photographer Nick Bay was able to test this lens, and of it, he says, quote, "Did it get me interested in landscape and astrophotography? Yes, it is a really fun and sharp lens to have with features that addresses the needs of many landscape and astrophotographers," end quote. The Leica 12mm f2.8 will officially launch July 30th, 2016, with a Kickstarter campaign to take pre-orders and will be available in Canon, Nikon, Sony A, Pentax K, and Sony E mounts. Next. For many, Bitcoin represents an underground currency responsible for a whole lot of nonsense, but for others, a secure method of making payments. All of that aside, since we're not talking about currency here today, someone has figured out how to use blockchain, the public database that's used to verify Bitcoin transactions, for a completely unintended reason, helping to protect your images. Called Block AI, this free service, which isn't at all a substitute for registering your images with the Copyright Office, is a method of claiming ownership of your images in an effort to establish who owns them should you find someone else using them online. Which is always annoying, of course. People think, just because it's online, it's available to download and use. No, it's not. I mean, it is, but it's illegal. So don't do it. So basically, how this works is you register a photo on the service, and Block AI automatically writes a permanent timestamp on the Bitcoin blockchain, which cannot be altered. In addition, it gives you a proof of publishing certificate, which you can later use to prove that the images that you found being used without your permission are actually yours. Or can you? I mean, of course, this really doesn't prove anything now, does it? It just proves that you used the service and you had it spit out a certificate. You know, if you think about it, a thief could take your images and register them right now and beat you to it. And then what are you going to do? Again, there's nothing like registering them with the government's copyright office so it has actual legal teeth. That and being able to recover statutory damages. Of that, Block AI CEO Nathan Lanz says, quote, "In America, if you want to win money in a lawsuit, you still need to register with the government," end quote. Now, most people aren't ever going to sue, and most intellectual property attorneys won't even take the case unless it's registered, of course, and there's a certainty of a big, fat paycheck. I mean, we're talking in the tens of thousands of dollars. Now, thieves may or may not know that, and for those that don't or are just too lazy to hit the Google, one of these Block AI certificates may be enough to get a token settlement out of them, or at very least to get them to remove your photos. And often, that's going to be enough for you, I think. But Sharky, you say, the internets, that's right, the internets is huge. If only there was a way to automatically find these infringements. Well, they have that covered as well. The Block AI system crawls said internets, finds any use of your images, then shares those matches via your Block AI profile, and that's pretty cool, I think. Lanz tells the Petapixel mothership, quote, "We believe the public matches could help by publicly shaming copyright violators," end quote. Okay, I get that, but I disagree. Image thieves really don't care. They just don't. That is, unless they have a photography business, perhaps. They've stolen some wedding photos that you've shot. You take to social media. You let other businesses in their area know that they're thieves, etc., and embarrass them. Otherwise, not so much. Over in the comments at the Petapixel mothership, noted copyright authority Jack Resnicki said this, quote, "This is not really helpful at all, in my opinion. Proving publication doesn't do anything in protecting you. It's like the fable of a poor man's copyright. Mailing yourself a photo in a sealed envelope, urban myth that many photographers found out the hard way, is worthless," end quote. Now, Jack knows what he's talking about. Along with co-author Edward C. Greenberg, he wrote The Copyright Zone, a legal guide for photographers and artists in the digital age. It is a great book, by the way, and if you really care about your copyright, that would be the one to get. Now, this all said, it couldn't hurt to give this service a try and be more aware about trying to protect your images. So if you want to do that, head on over to blockai.com. Next. If you've always wondered what the top cameras, lenses, and settings on photo sharing sites were, hey, it could happen. You could have been bored one day, I guess. We've got the answer for you. And by we, I mean me, of course. Pulling data from Flickr, 500px, and other websites out there which make use of the camera's EXIF data, explorecams.com found out what was being used out there, and I'm going to let you know. Data from nearly 7 million cameras was analyzed using EXIF tool, and of the top 5 cameras used, all but the one in the number 4 spot, a Nikon D7100, were Canons. The top being the 5D Mark III, followed by the 6D, the 5D Mark II, then that Nikon D7100, and then the Canon 7D. As for lenses, the most used was Canon's EF 24-105mm f4 LIS, a great lens. Next was Nikon's 18-105mm f3.5-5.6 GED, then Canon's EF 50mm f1.8 Mark II, also known as Plastic Fantastic, or Nifty 50, then the Nikon 18-55mm f3.5-5.6 kit lens, and then Canon's version of that kit lens. When it comes to what ISO people use, by far it was ISO 100. Or if you're Tony Northrup, ISO 100. I know it's ISO, but I'm just going to keep on saying ISO. I'm wrong, I know it, and that's the important part right there. All right, back to what was used here. You know, what's really surprising to me is that people used ISO 100 way more than the others. It wasn't even close. I guess most people must be shooting outside in bright sunlight to be able to use ISO 100. They must. Now, following that was ISOs 200, 400, 800, and 1600, oddly in that order. That's pretty interesting as well. I would have expected it to jump all around, but instead it took that natural progression up to 1600, which is pretty weird. Okay, now as for shutter speeds, this is also a bit surprising. The most used was 1/125th of a second. That's a surprisingly slow shutter speed to me. Clearly, these people are not shooting sports, right? You know, just because they're shooting 1/125th of a second doesn't mean these are tack sharp photos. These could all be out of focus, blurry photos that are on 500px and Flickr, etc. Well, maybe not 500px, certainly Flickr. In case you were wondering, the other four shutter speeds were all over the place from 1/60th of a second on up to 2/50th of a second, and they were all equal, as I said. Now, like many of you out there, I mainly shoot in aperture priority. I think it's a good 90% of people shoot in aperture priority most of the time, just not at f5.6. That's the aperture that took the top spot. My favorite, f2.8, came in second, followed by f8, f4, and f22. F22, clearly the landscape shooters out there. If you want way more detailed info and you have a couple hours to kill, the Explore Cams website has all that for you. And you know what? You might find it useful. There's little bits of information and knowledge that you can pick up along the way in places that you wouldn't otherwise think so. That'll make you a better photographer. If you think about it, the more data points that you collect along the way as a photographer, the more you understand the bigger picture. No pun intended. For the link to the specific page with these infographics, hit the show notes for episode 93 at petapixel.com/podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 93 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 94. Well, it's f8 and 2/50th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
If you'd like to see some of the many places he's captured, there's no butter. No butter? I guess we're going to have to get more butter.